The four, calling them big Bible principles, and they kind of, but not really, can start with the word F if you force them to. So what? Remember what our four big Bible principles are?
Fill the void.
Fill the void.
Focus.
Fill, yes, right. Focus on what you want to move towards, become, think about. The idea of then fill yourself up with your focus. Good. Do the opposite is the fourth one. Good. Remember the third one?
Fully commit.
Be determined. Fully surrender. Fully commit. And then do the opposite. So do the opposite is where you're like, well, that doesn't start at all with an F. So fill, you don't just focus on the bad things you want to stop. You don't just focus on the behaviors you want to change. You're actually going to be focused just as much or more on what you want to be instead, what you want to fill with instead. Focus on the direction you're headed, fully commit, fully drop, and then fight by doing the opposite. So we got our fourth F there by saying fight by doing the opposite. But really, do the opposite is so catchy, it's like, what's the point? Okay, so the homework was to try to apply these four things to this situation. A young man realizes when he comes home from school is when he's habitually looking at pornography. As he's talking to you about his problems, you can see he's only thinking in terms of stopping the bad behaviors. So give him ideas of how to implement the four big steps of what we've been talking about. So any thoughts about things he can do to fill the void? Obviously, it's a generic example, but hopefully it's still a useful exercise to think through the steps.
Hang out with Christian friends.
Okay, so don't just sit at home doing nothing. Hang out with people, hang out with good people. Okay, excellent.
Make up a sport or some sort of exercise.
Okay.
You've got time to do that, then you've got time to go for a run.
Yes. Yes. Good. Do something that you probably find enjoyable or satisfying that's going to be particularly helpful. And, you know, we talked about filling the void on different levels. There's some of the stuff that's on the more superficial level, but it's still helpful because it's addressing the behavior itself. You know, classic example of that is I reach for a cigarette, instead I'm going to reach for the Lifesaver candy, right? So on a more superficial level, okay, what can we be doing instead? Some good suggestions, right? Spend that time doing different things, doing better things, etc. Yeah, Laura, was that a hand?
Sure.
Oh.
I can have a hand, but there was that one back there, so.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead. I was just wondering, is he home alone? Does he feel lonely?
Yeah, sure. Great.
That's what Lauren and I were doing.
Yes.
Good. So some of that may be more pragmatic, some of that kind of maybe deeper motivation. And is he home alone because he doesn't have friends? That may be a big part of the equation. I don't know, right? This is a hypothetical situation. Okay, I put on a more superficial level, change up your routine. Don't go home right away. Cut off access. That's you know, cutting off your hand to save your soul. Deeper, is there laziness going on? Lazy behaviors lead to sinful behaviors. If you need rest, okay. What are some ways you can get rest without being lazy? Who can you call and reach out to? What are Bible verses you can fill yourself up with, right? Even deeper is what's the ultimate drive for this that is stronger than your other drives, right? And so what are the driving forces behind your desire for the pornography? What comes to mind when you imagine giving it up? What emotions do you feel? That may bring to the surface what's really going on. So I imagine giving that up, and I feel this overwhelming loneliness. Well, do you think maybe loneliness is then connected to the problem? Or anger, or sadness, or pride, you name it, right? What relationships can I improve in my life to keep me stronger? So just relationships in general that are godly, that are going to be helpful. How can I be more connected to good people in a general sense that will then help me in this specific kind of way? Any other thoughts on principle number one? Yeah, Lauren.
I'm with relationships. Like if he's at school and the other boys are talking about it.
Exactly.
So switching up the peer pressure to be involved.
Yeah, doing what you can with that. Very good. Okay, Corinne?
I was just going to add that I don't know how deep this
person has been in this behavior. I've experienced where it's been very deep. It causes a change in the brain chemistry. And so recovery from that never happens in isolation. So if that person is not reaching out for help, if they're not engaging, sorry, this lesson was very traumatic for me, and I promised myself I wasn't gonna do this, but because it's something I've dealt with for so long, it just resonates so deeply for me. And I have the heart to help someone, not necessarily with the pornography, but with the being on the receiving end of that. So anyway, I just wanted to bring up that if they are not engaging with others, if they are isolating, they are not getting help for that problem. And so many times that addiction needs so much help, so much help, especially if it's been going on for years and years. And so they're gonna be withdrawal symptoms, and what that is gonna look like is gonna be heartbreaking sometimes, but they can get to a level of sobriety if they try, if they really reach people that can give them help. And so it may involve getting a mentor. It may involve having accountability software. It may involve a support group. Most likely it will, if it's been going on for so long.
Yeah.
They have to commit to regular time with God. Maybe listening to audiobooks, podcasts, journaling. Of course, the self-care we talked about. So I've seen the deep end of it. I hope that these people we're referring to right now are people that have not gotten that deep. That maybe it's just been something that they just had a small issue with, because it's just so prevalent in our society.
Yes.
It's everywhere. You can't get on your phone and not see it, especially if you search that word porn. You might as well just throw that phone away and get a new one, is basically what that boils down to, because there's just so many, on Facebook, there's just these algorithms, and
yes,
you just can't get rid of it until you get a new phone. So I just want to be an advocate for women, maybe that are dealing with that in their marriage. And so if there are people that need to talk to someone, I would be a person that they should come to, because I've been down that road. I've been in support groups, and I just know of resources that can be helpful.
Absolutely.
So I just wanted to say that.
Yeah.
When I have Jacob.
Thank you.
So,
yes.
Thank you.
Yeah. So the challenges are multifaceted. It's a multifaceted problem. I really like the things you said. You're not going to solve it in isolation. And if we kind of set up that self barrier of, well, I'm going to work really hard on this, but I'll never fill in the blank. I'll never talk to the elders. I'll never go to a group. Well, then you might as well be saying no to growth if that's the thing that you need. And so that's what we want to do, is to make those things as accessible as possible, help people take those steps. And there are difficult steps, but because it's not going to happen in isolation, because it's not just one little change that needs to happen, but this process. All of those things are needed for encouragement. So I think that is well said. Additional things. Principle number two of filling yourself up with your focus. Here's what I put. What can you say to the young man to help him focus on what he needs to be focusing on and not focusing on? Don't focus on the sin, not allowing yourself to fantasize, right? That's a feeding of it. Focus on spiritual truths, focus on good relationships, focus on good things to be doing. And so what did you guys put with number two here?
Finding a service task.
Okay, very good. So connecting with others, that the benefit we get from serving, it gets us outside of ourselves. It changes up our little universe that we've been putting ourselves into. Yeah, Heather.
I wonder if it would be helpful at all to ask, what kind of woman do you want to be with one day? And what kind of man do you think she's worthy of? And so what are some things that you need to do to get from where you are to where you could be worthy of a woman like that?
Yeah, so that's a great thing to focus on and be moving towards that. Good. Third one, fully commit, because it's a process, because it takes time. It's not going to be a one-day decision. It's going to be a day-after-day decision. So what can you say to the young man to help him in his determination, right? How determined are you with this? This is a great question to ask. What are the excuses or the justifications that come to mind when you're tempted? We all have that, right? Well, it'll just be this once. Well, I have done well, so I deserve this. Well, no one will know. Well, I can fix it later. All these justifications or excuses, look for that. Notice that. Be aware of that. Can you write out a plan of action? When do you feel the weakest resolve? Write some wisdom about it. What could you say along the lines of needing to fully surrender? Are you still kind of wanting this, or have you really put it to death? Have you really let it go? Do you want to get better? All those things. Now, I'll be the first to say, what the Bible teaches us is just because we are struggling with something, that doesn't mean that necessarily, oh, you're not trying hard enough. I think Psalm 119 shows us you can be giving it your all and still have struggles, still have challenges. But sometimes we aren't wanting it enough. Sometimes we aren't putting in 100%. So that is a reasonable question. When someone's giving 100%, they're still failing, then you address other things and try to continue to encourage them and build them up along those lines. Okay, any other thoughts with principle number three? Yeah, Phoebe?
A big excuse that I've heard is that, like, I've had a bad day.
Yes.
To help. And people can find addiction as self-care, where it's like, you know, well, like you said, I deserve this. Like, you know, this is me taking care of myself. But you don't realize, to look at the mirror, you can really look at yourself and know, like, you're damaging yourself. You're slowly killing yourself, and you don't even know it until you really realize it.
I see that kind of energy or that kind of spirit of our age in a lot of justifications for just a lot of drinking, right? It's like, well, I've had a bad day. This is self-care. Kind of, I've earned this. Well, when you have, literally, there's billboards in our society that say, you know, you've had a rough day. You've earned a donut, right? You've earned this flavor of yogurt in the grocery store. You know what I mean? Whatever it is, you deserve this. You've earned it. Well, it becomes related to that. So I've had a bad day, so I'll come home and drink some. It just really feeds that kind of thing. Darla, do you have a hand?
Well, I don't have any, you know. I just think that the person needs to fully confess. Like, they should say it out loud. They need to really own this problem.
Right.
Not, you know, try to skirt around it, or like you said, excuses. And they need to be full of godly sorrow. I mean, how are they going to, if they're not really sorry, if there's that part of them that's not really sorry, how are they going to move forward?
Yeah, so good. So godly sorrow, 2 Corinthians 8, I think that's right. 2 Corinthians 7. And that's another good thing to fill ourselves up with. As we fill ourselves up with God's truth, Joel 2, rend your heart, not your garments, like, really fully, then that's Joel 3, but rend your heart, not your garments, really fully returning your heart to God. Psalm 51, right? Really bringing your heart back to God and fully processing this. If we're kind of sweeping it under the rug in some way, that's just going to come back and keep hindering us. Okay, good. Lauren? Did you have a hand? No. It's just the way you're holding your pen. Steven?
So there's like a thousand things going in my mind, but I'll keep it brief. The one thing that I want to focus on is that our assumption is this person is not, you know, incredibly deep into it, but their chemistry of their brain has started to change, because what I'm learning is this addiction and many others are much like a heroin crack addict, to the point that if they quit cold, I'm not saying someone shouldn't quit cold turkey, but with pornography, but there's an element of quitting cold turkey that it could kill you, because the body has become chemistry adapted to that drug, that they need it to function. Pornography is different, I think, I don't know, in that way. But what I'm pointing out is that our assumption is this person has enough of a brain to pull in the self-desire and the self-rationale and the self-thinking, because what that leads me to is, who are we as a family to that person? Are we that person that's going to create the revolving door that's already in their mind of, when we fall into a sin and addiction, or we fall, we feel bad about it, and we feel shame in ourselves, and then we want to remedy that, so we fall back into that addiction a little bit and adapt to feel soothed by it, which is the revolving door of the trauma, and again, these are just trying to be highlighted. So are we the family that wraps our arms around them and admits our faults, so that person can open up to us, so we can create an army around them to help? So my point in focusing is that are we the family that person can open up to and talk to? Are we the person that sits in and casts judgment, or, well, I've not dealt with that, so tell me how that feels? Well, that person's not going to talk to you about it, or they're going to be less likely to. Are we going to create a situation where they're going to feel less self-esteem by admitting it to someone? And so I guess my point is just that we need to try to work on ourselves as a church and as people, not as a church. I mean, the church can only do so much, but people individually, that would create an open environment for someone who is struggling with this addiction, or many others, to be able to confide in us and to talk to us and be a safe place for them to be a help to understand. I may not have all the tools that Corinne has or anybody else, but be the person that could be that advocate to help find that tool and help connect the dots. And what I'm finding is just the men that I've talked to with this throughout college and in recent years is that it's hard to talk to people about it because they are shamed even more because of many reasons. If a man wants to have power over another man, they're going to make him feel less. Oh, you deal with that. I can't believe it. Or do we want to just kneel down with them and help them out? And so creating a help atmosphere around them will be a big part of, are they going to get out of it or not? So
yeah. So it's absolutely a two-way street, and we want to help people and reach out to them as best we can and create those bridges. They've got to take those steps too. And so I don't think it's also healthy for us to self-flagellate of, we're not doing enough, we're not a good enough church. That's why people still have problems is me. People have to take their own steps too. And so we really have to have that balance of being accessible, but then they've got to walk through that door. When they do that, try to help them in humility. I think Paul's letters in the New Testament are such good examples of that, where he doesn't look down on them. He says, I'm the chief of sinners, right? And we just are here to help the weak. That's what we're here for. Good. Yeah, David.
I'm a picture person, so in my mind, it helps me with an analogy. A person who wants to sin a little and be righteous a little, sin a little, is a fence sitter. Someone who sits on the fence. Well, we need to recognize we control what we do. If you can do one side, you can do the other. So you have to make a choice. It's kind of like Joshua said, you know, it's time to make a choice. You decide, are you going to be God's people, or are you not going to be God's people? And that's back to the, I own this, you know, it's my life. I've got to decide. No matter what, whether somebody comes to me gruff with pointing out my sin, or somebody comes to me caring, pointing out my sin, it's my decision.
Yeah.
I have to decide left or right. And the other principle that goes along with this is, after I choose, God controls my destiny. He's the one who will either put me in heaven or hell. I have to remember that.
Yeah. So, reminds me of the book of James has this theme of being double-minded, right? We want to do what's right, but we also struggle with it. And so that's everyone's challenge. There's all kinds of ways that I still can look at that and go, oh, I'm still double-minded. I still want the things of the world and the things of God. And so that reminder is so helpful for all of us, to be more pure of heart and seeking just the things of God. and keep working on any all those ways in which I still kind of want to have it both ways. That's where I get torn, is because I'm being pulled in two directions. Good. Yeah, Heather.
One of the things you fully commit to is fully commit to believing in God's grace. And the power of that grace, I just think often I undersell. Like, it's so easy if somebody falls, when I fall again to the same temptation, to feel like there's no more grace left, as though there's a, you know, limited amount that God's like, oh, you used it all up, Heather. Like, not to mean that we should be free in sinning, but that we should be free in confessing, so that we're still accessing this grace. And to Darla's point, Edwin Crozier said in his series on prayer that when we specifically confess, we've now identified a lost battle and a weakness in our defense. And so instead of just thinking of like a blanket confession, oh, I'm not doing too well, or I could be a better Christian, like who can't amen that? To be specific, then allow some kind of an action plan, to your point. Like, all right, so where were we weak? What's going on? How do we shore that?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And this exercise, for better or worse, thing as a whole, started with he has identified, you know what, it's this time of day when I have the struggle. Let's build on that then. Let's build on that. And the fourth one, do the opposite. What are some things the young man needs to do so that he's doing the opposite of what his enslavement and lust wants him to do? So, you know, this is just especially true of addiction. Addiction wants you to focus on it, move towards it, and do it. Obviously, like pull the trigger, right? Get that drug hit, whatever it is. So the addiction wants you to focus on it, move towards it, and do it. Can you picture that very easily in a gambling addiction, right? You're thinking about it during the day, you're distracted at work, and then after work, you, maybe I'll take this road home, that's Proverbs 7, right? And I think I'll hang out with my buddies and we'll just hang out at the bar where there's some gambling going on. Well, I won't play today, but you're still moving towards it, right? And then, obviously, you get yourself close to it. And so that idea of doing the opposite, well, it's pretty easy to say. What would the opposite of focusing on it be? What would the opposite of moving towards it be, right? It's pulling you into temptation, so you'll have to resist that, right? The moving you in. You can't make a step towards it. That's the man who intentionally goes by the harlot's house. Can't make opportunity or provision for the flesh, allowing for it. Don't keep going on the same paths that lead to the same outcome, right? Same path, same outcome. You're gonna have to interrupt the pattern or interrupt the cycle that leads to the sin, right? And so if I see that pattern starting, right? I see I'm taking steps towards the fridge and I'm opening it up and I'm grabbing that can of alcohol and then whatever it is, I see this pattern. At any point I need to interrupt it. At any point I can interrupt that, right? Don't focus on the lust. You're not trying not to feed the lust. So I thought I had another chart. You know what? The chart maybe later on of doing the opposite. Yeah, so I'll just go ahead and go to the chart. So doing the opposite. So instead of focusing on it, I focus on other things. I'm at work. I'm picturing gambling. I'm wanting to gamble. No, choose to focus on other things, right? Fill yourself up with that focus. The opposite of moving towards it, don't move towards it. Be honest with yourself. Okay, I kind of want to go to the bar because there's going to be people there who are playing poker or doing whatever, and I don't want that, right? Don't make provisions for the flesh. The opposite of doing it is not doing it, right? Interrupt the pattern. Don't take that next step towards it. Okay, so any thoughts on kind of doing the opposite? There. Yeah, Laura.
Real hands.
Okay, great.
I feel like memorizing a specific scripture, even a hymn, like so that when you start to feel that, I mean, that's what Christ did when he was tempted, right? So
yes.
He contradicted it with something. So you might not feel the desire to, like, okay, instead of looking at porn when I get home, I'm going to go read my Bible, because that's might not sound seems exciting to your brain. But having something memorized that's there in front of you, putting it on, you know, scripture on your phone, just putting some roadblocks for yourself to help you as you're starting to move towards it or not focus on it.
So. Yeah, absolutely. So the idea of having a battle verse is great. I have that verse that I'm going to think about, I'm going to go to. And that we see that model with Christ when he was tempted, he went to scripture. I would just say don't even limit it to that, like you said. It's like, what are songs I can be singing? How can I be focusing during the day? Because what you don't want to do is have an unfocused mind. What prayer so often in the New Testament is linked with, be watchful in prayer, right? So I have unfocused mind all day, unspiritual mind all day. Instead of listening to godly things on my commute, I'm just listening to stupid stuff. Okay, I get home and I'm tempted. Oh, where's my battle verse? Well, you need a battle verse then, yes. Interrupt that cycle, yes. But you know, the setup for that should have been hours in the making. You know, that kind of idea of being focused, watchful in prayer, praying all the time, that idea. Yeah, Phoebe.
So I'm one who loves mental health apps, and if I'm having a really bad day, I'm struggling, found a new app, it's called Quabble. You take care of a little duck, and he grows with you, I know, and you customize him. There's more, there's mental health, don't worry. And there's little activities you can do, and I have a morning routine where in the morning, I have a mood diary, I have a gratitude jar, and I have what they call bamboo forest, which is where you just send out a worry down the little stream, and people can reply to it, and they can also vent. And there's so much on this app, and it has helped me with a routine of like following through on something.
Good.
And it helps with distraction.
Yeah.
And it's just giving you good things, like the gratitude. It's like, I'm glad I stopped doing this, and I'm moving on to this. It's really helped.
Yeah. So things like that can be very helpful when I'm needed to replace this with something in an immediate kind of way, right? So it's like, instead of, well, let's just use the cigarette example. Instead of grabbing a cigarette, what else can I grab? Well, you could say, well, you need to grab a Bible verse. Sure. You know what? Can't we also grab some chocolate to help with that state? You know what I mean? And then getting more and more deep, not staying on the superficial, but dealing with the whole man in all those ways. So some of those things can be helpful. Okay, so let's go through this. The goal now is, in this class and Wednesday and in the final class, is to focus on some of these specifics. We did this on Wednesday. Anxiety wants to avoid. Anxiety wants to run away. Anxiety wants to shrink back. So to do the opposite, we need to confront the fear. And that can be physically doing that. And that can just be in my mind, my heart, standing my ground to the bullying voice, to the emotions, the reality altering distortions that fear brings, because fear does distort reality. So standing our ground to that. This can even just be in our heart, right? You may not know that someone is in that moment standing up to a fear, but that's maybe exactly what's going on in their head. The other thing that anxiety wants to, this is obviously simplified, but another big thing is anxiety wants to fix, right? You can't rest, you can't let it be. I gotta change something, gotta fix it. So to grow out of it, we learn to let go and not fix, right? So dropping things, letting go is a fundamental skill for tackling anxiety. And building those brain muscles of letting things go and dropping it. And at first, to drop it, I may need to do something very engaging, like, watch TV, read my favorite book, look at the news, whatever it is. But that needs to calm down over time, and so then I'm going to drop it and work those muscles. That uses the good brain muscles, strengthens those. Obviously, your brain doesn't have muscles. You know what I'm talking about. And it starves the anxiety and over time really weakens that piece of it. Ideally, Christians should be great at dropping things. Obviously, we need to grow in that. But we should be great because we have a God that we can trust. He is at work. He's helping me. He knows my problems. He knows the hair on my head. He knows when the sparrow falls. He knows my needs before I know them. And so I can grow in this because God is on my side. So it's like all those psalms where they bring the problem to God, they trust that he heard, and now he's going to solve the problem. So I'm anxious about this thing. Say a prayer. But then move on. And then, okay, I said my prayer. I heard that. I need to really trust that God heard that. I don't need to pray more. At this point, the act of faith is actually to move forward and do the next thing. So that's where growth happens in that area, just like the Psalms show us. Okay, this is where new material. Doing the opposite of what depression wants you to do. Well, what does that look like? Well, depression wants to weigh us down, right? So often, descriptions of the experience of depression is a weight. It's certainly a down emotion, either feeling tired, lack of drive, desire, motivation, all those kinds of things. So to grow out of it, we do need to keep doing the things that help us move forward. So once again, quoting, you know, our friend Dr. Yapko, it's like, well, I'm depressed, I don't want to exercise. Well, actually, that will help you move forward. I'm depressed, I don't want to do the dishes. There's too many dishes. Well, guess what? Get up, work on the dishes some. That's going to help you do the next thing, move forward to the next thing. That's going to help you get out of it, even though that's not what you want to do right now. In many disorders, and this is just especially true of depression, stuck is a good description. You know, if someone can articulate that, I just feel stuck. Feel stuck in this job, relationship, emotion. I feel stuck in my head, whatever it is. And so depression certainly has that stuck feel to it. That's why there's such a hopelessness. Hopelessness and stuck go together, because I'm hopeless, because I feel stuck and I won't be able to get out of this. When we lack motivation, we need to learn to do the things that we know will help us in the long run, right? So I need to keep doing the dishes, or else that's just going to make me more depressed. I need to get up out of bed, whatever it is, because that's going to help me in the long run, right? So instead of the weighing down just become a compounding problem where I'm getting more and more weighed down, and therefore I'm letting go of the things I need to be kind of working on and giving up on those things, that doesn't mean that doing the dishes is going to help you feel better, but it's going to be better for you in the long run that you keep forcing yourself to do that and not let that weigh you down, than the opposite, which is, well, now I'm depressed because I can't even do the dishes, you know, that, like, that kind of thing. Okay, the other thing is that depression wants us to hold on to things and to not let them go. And so to grow out of it, we need to let God meet us in our depression and make sure that God is helping to not leave you there. The point is not, well, you just are holding on to that thing from your childhood, that thing from your past, and just let it go. No, that's not the point. That's not how you help people. That's not how we want to be helped. You're not saying let it go and that painful thing, just get over it. No, how can God meet you in your sorrow? How can we meet you in your sorrow and meet you in that really sad, awful place that was bad, was awful, and then once you've been met there, let God then move you forward. Let people move you forward, right? God and his people want to meet you where you're at. They want to meet you with compassion in that place, but then let them help you out of it. So that's what we want to avoid. So God meets me in my sorrow, and then God says, okay, now let's move forward. And you go, well, no, I'm not moving forward. No, that's where when people meet us there, what then is a step then? How can God then help you take that next step to move out of it? So this is not a dismissal of your feelings. It is allowing those feelings to be addressed and met and then to move forward out of them. Does that make sense? Thoughts on any of that? Yes.
Definitely agree with all of that. I think kind of summing up a little bit what I heard Stephen say earlier, and then to piggyback a little bit what Heather said, sometimes God's people don't meet with compassion. And so with somebody who's going through an addiction, and again, I'm learning a ton the last couple of years myself too, but just being, our job is to just have compassion. And if we haven't walked through it, then don't say much about it. Point them to a mentor who has. And I think Heather, you brought up Edwin Crozier, and I think he's very open about his struggles with pornography. So finding someone who has walked that road, and those of us who haven't, just be there to have compassion, do our best not to shame, because they're already feeling so much shame. So just being extremely careful what we say and pointing them in those resources. If we don't understand, we haven't walked that road, then we can't help them. We need to point them to the resources that can, so the mentors that can.
Sure. Okay, Phoebe?
Another coping mechanism I've seen, especially when you're stuck in your head, is a safe place that you make. So Quabble has another exercise that goes through all of your senses, where it's like, what do you smell, what do you see, and then it saves your safe space. You can just go back and read it. It's in your head.
Got it.
What I do love about that is the idea of how powerful our brain can be.
Mm-hmm.
And so instead of using it to dwell on things that I'm trying to hold on to, why don't I use it for something else? Why, instead of going back to a scene in my mind that's depressing, create a new scene or go to a place that wasn't?
Yeah, yeah.
Our mind has that kind of power.
Yep. Whatever is true, honorable, just, praiseworthy, think about these things. Yes. Good. Okay. Addiction, we talked about this. Addiction wants to give in. Fundamentally, addiction wants you to focus on it, move towards it, and do it. We've kind of seen that today. So to grow out of it, we need to obey God, not the cravings. We need to form new associations. We get stuck in the behavior ruts we've made in our brain, right? Those paths and those patterns become so easy for us. But the more we choose differently, the more we do differently, we're strengthening the new path, right? The more frequently we choose the rational path, the easier it gets. Obviously, that's a bumpy road, and growth is not linear. But in general, I keep choosing the more rational path, the better path. I'm creating new ruts, and the easier that's going to be. Addiction wants you to focus on the drug, so choose to focus on other things. And then that's where this chart showed up, right? So not focusing on it, but focus on better things, spiritual things. Don't move towards it. Be honest with yourself. Don't make allowances and provisions for the flesh. Don't do it. Don't give in. Interrupt that pattern at any point. Okay, so we've hit on that. Let's move forward to anger. Anger wants to do something, right? And, you know, this bad thing happened. My kids shouldn't be this, shouldn't do this. So I need to do something. And this kind of need to act on it. Well, the point is not that you can't ever do anything when you're angry. You certainly got to be careful, though. Be angry and sin not, right? But what we often need to learn is to not act out, not act on it. And so to grow in anger, I actually need to learn to tolerate that feeling, right? I may be filled up with so much anger, and I feel like I need to do something. I've got to do something. I've got to say something to the kids. I've got to say something to my wife. I got to say something to my employee, whatever. Actually, to grow in that, I learned to tolerate. I may be crazy mad in the inside, but I'm learning to not act out. I'm strengthening those self-control muscles, and actually learning to tolerate that feeling without acting on it is going to be what helps me, right? That's the new pathway I'm forming. I'm having control, not the anger. Learning to tolerate those miserable feelings, just like Jesus tolerated the miserable feelings on the cross, right? Or at any stage in his life, where I'm going to just have to sit here and be miserable for a minute while I'm so angry. I don't have to act on it. I can just sit in this, calm down, not do something that I shouldn't do. The other thing is that anger, when anger is really a problem, is that I see myself as a victim, right? That this is against me. I'm so angry not because of the injustice towards orphans and widows. I see myself as the victim. That's why it's such a problem, right? And so to grow out of that, I need to be filled up with Christ. Look for these attitudes. If I have an anger problem, do I see bitterness, revenge, victimhood, and lists of wrongdoing, right? So, my kids are always so... And where does your mind go? Disrespectful to me. Ah, that's it. The story I'm telling is that I'm this person who keeps being sinned against, right?
5-minute warning.
And so I see myself, I'm being sinned against, there, whatever. That's this list of wrongdoings. That's this victimhood. There's a bitterness there. And so I need to change the story in my head. I need to change the story of what I'm telling myself about the situation. 1 Peter 2 and 3 says, you may have an unfair master, but you need to put Jesus in that story and deal with your unfair, unkind, unjust master in a better way. Wives, you need to reframe the story of how you're looking at your marriage. Husbands, you need to reframe the story of how you're looking at your wife. She's not, this ball and chain, as we joke. You honor her as the weaker vessel, retell that story. So you're not a victim. There's not a list of wrongdoings. You don't need to be angry about that. So that's kind of the idea there of anger wanting to do something and anger seeing myself as a victim. Thoughts about that?
Yeah. I'm thinking we've got to make sure when we're working on that, that we're not letting people in our ear that
they're
feed it.
Yeah.
Because that's just such a common human thing to, you know, relate to people. Yeah, I agree. You don't deserve that. And
that's right. So what are the people telling me? And what is my own inner dialogue telling me, right, about this? Was there another hand in the back? Okay, and then, you know, we won't have time to cover all this, but shame is such an important thing. It's been brought up today. Shame wants to hide, right? Well, what's the opposite of that? How do I do the opposite? If shame wants me to not show who I really am, that's Genesis 3, right? Shame, I go run and hide behind a bush, right? Shame wants to hide. Well, to do the opposite of that, we need to open up with people who can help us. The way out of shame is through it, with encouraging people, of course. Shame is so connected with others, right? That's kind of the fundamental piece of it, is it can be me with myself, but obviously me with others. And so, discouraging conversations will only feed the shame more, right? So I go to you to help me with this, but if you just amp up the shame, and what I needed you to do was help me to get out of the shame, well then, that's put me in a worse place, right? In a very real sense, we need others to get the shame to a place of healing. Now, you can go to your grave with those things unresolved. You can live your life with those things unresolved. But if we're going to improve it and resolve it, then you need encouraging people who are going to help you with that. And again, like we said before this quarter, ultimately, God helps us with that. But that's this indirect relationship that I'm walking with by faith. It's the people around me that are going to be able to then be such a healing help there, right? Shame wants you to hide. And then the second thing shame wants to do is shame wants you to see yourself as worthless, right? In a thousand ways, maybe even using Bible verses to make you feel like you are worthless. So here's two great statements that we'll pick up here on Wednesday. But shame tells me I'm worthless, so I need to change the story that I'm telling about myself, the story that I see myself in. In other words, I need to change my story to be God's story about me. Is God's story about me the story that I see myself in? I need to retell my story. I need to change my story to be God's story. Another way of saying that truth, but just with different words, is we need to learn to see ourselves as God sees us. One of those might resonate for you more than the other. It could be that it helps you to think, I need to see myself as God sees me. Or you might need to think, I need to change my story to be God's story. But either way, it's the same thing, is don't let the shame be king. Let God be king, and let his story and his view of me be what the real reality that I'm embracing here. So we'll pick up on that. I don't have any specific homework for Wednesday, but you can think about this point of changing the story we tell about ourselves, seeing ourselves as God sees us, as we kind of are wrapping up this whole idea of do the opposite. So the goal with today was, what is it that anger wants me to do? What does shame want me to do? And essentially, if I can remember that, I need to do the opposite. I need to do the opposite of what anger
end of class
is trying to make me do, the opposite of what shame wants me to do, et cetera, et cetera. Thank you guys so much.